I'm proud to be a Jew, but that's way too Jewish for me.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Rabbi Jenny Rosen, founder and CEO of Dayenu, a Jewish call to climate action. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com. Or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. This is a very special morning here on Two Jewish. We are celebrating our Chai, our 18th anniversary of the Two Jewish radio show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends. It's more than a little hard to believe we've been providing the finest in Jewish radio experiences for 18 full years. And so, in celebration of 940 editions of Two Jewish, dating back to August of 2002, we are now officially ready for a champagne toast to get us going. A traditional anniversary toast, L'chaim. Chai, for 18 full years of everything Jewish and interesting brought to you weekly right here on the radio with never a single repeat episode. Actually, we finally had one repeat episode a couple of years ago after a travel and medical emergency. Still, that's pretty darn good, no? When we began Two Jewish 18 years ago, our goal was to reach out, entertain, and intrigue anyone and everyone interested in Jewish life. Ethics, culture, contemporary events, history, Israel, music, films, books, food, art, holidays, humor, as well as anything and everything else Jewish. Two Jewish was designed for Jews of all denominations and flavors, of course, but was also created to help people who aren't Jewish learn about and maybe be inspired and influenced by the fabulous religion and culture of Judaism. By exploring all aspects of Jewish life and living, without limiting ourselves to one movement or ethnic or national aspect, we hope to explain what Judaism really is in the 21st century, which was a much newer century when we started than it is now. That means explaining what Judaism has been for nearly 4,000 years and continues to be today and for the foreseeable future. As Fiddler on the Roof taught us, tradition. On Two Jewish, when we started, we were going to explain and teach and celebrate and joke about Jewish tradition and make it referable to our discerning radio audience, broadly, with intelligence and humor. But a funny thing happened on the way to the airwaves and then eventually to podcasts. We discovered that contemporary Jewish life is about much more than tradition. It's also consistently about innovation. New and exciting things happen everywhere in the Jewish world nearly all the time. Judaism is very much about the process of engaging a great tradition with the best of contemporary life on a constant basis. It is this dynamic process, this continuing evolution of our 3,800-year-old religion into something fresh and new that's at the heart of Jewish survival and ongoing development. And that has made creating Two Jewish each and every week for 18 years a continual surprise and an ongoing delight, at least for me, I hope for you too, for 941 consecutive shows. To play us in on this celebratory morning, here's a Shehecheyanu, the Jewish prayer for all good and new things, by cantor Marcus Feldman with musicians and choir conducted by Ariel Cohen. Blessed are you, God, who gives life, sustains us, brings us to such a happy occasion. That was Cantor Marcus Feldman singing Shehecheyanu, the prayer thanking God for celebrations like this, our 18th anniversary of Two Jewish. When we return in a moment on Two Jewish, our guest, Rabbi Jenny Rosen, the founder and CEO of a new organization called Dayenu, a Jewish call to climate action, will share why this is the most important Jewish issue today, for her, but for many of us. Find out why when we return in a moment here on Two Jewish.
There's magic in the air at this special place for fun, a place where fortune smiles and Tucson comes alive. This is Casino del Sol, the best games in town, amazing dining and top-flight entertainment. This is a heart that beats with excitement, with passion and beauty. It's all waiting for you at Casino del Sol. This is the soul of Tucson. Presenting sponsor of University of Arizona Basketball, Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaqui Tribe.
Congregation Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a new Jewish synagogue in northwest Tucson in the Catalina foothills, celebrates an array of services, classes, and events even this summer. Established by passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha has created a vibrant community that strives every day to serve God with joy. A new progressive congregation in northwest Tucson in the foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everyone throughout the whole metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Beit Simcha's synagogue is at 2270 West Ina Road, just west of La Cholla near the entrance to the Foothills Mall property. Services, classes, and events are open to everyone normally. In these days of coronavirus tsoras, join us every Friday night on our Facebook page for Shabbat evening celebration services at 6:30 p.m. Saturday morning services are at 10 a.m., all with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, leading them. Our Facebook page is Beit Simcha Tucson, B-E-I-T-S-I-M-C-H-A Tucson, and we'll hold our services with full music by virtual experience weekly for the time being. All of our Adult Education Academy classes are on Zoom, which you can access by emailing me at rabbi@beitsimchatucson.org. Our synagogue's at 2270 West Ina Road, west of La Cholla, the north side of Ina, at the entrance to the Foothills Mall property, not in the mall, but on the south side in our own building. For now, we are a fully functioning virtual congregation on Zoom and Facebook. Email me at rabbi@beitsimchatucson.org. BEITSIMCHA Tucson.org to get information. For more about Congregation Beit Simcha, to attend services, our great religious school and Torah Tikes program, bar and bat mitzvah, confirmation, and high school programs, and rich array of adult education academy courses, all taught on Zoom, and of course our services on Facebook, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org. That's our website, or call 520-276-5675. That's 520-276-5675. BeitSimchaTucson.org. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, in the fastest growing and newest Jewish synagogue community in southern Arizona in its exciting beginning years. We are delighted to welcome the Two Jewish our guest this morning. Rabbi Jenny Rosen is the founder and CEO of Dayenu, a Jewish call to climate action. A response to the terrible and, I guess, crucial issue of our time environmentally. I have to say she is a friend of long standing. That's I'm told to say that instead of saying an old friend. Good morning and welcome to Two Jewish, Jenny.
Thanks, Sam. It's great to be here.
So tell us why Dayenu now?
Great question. So we are facing the existential crisis of our time, the climate crisis. We know the science. We read staggering predictions of sea level rise. We feel the heat. We witness floods and fires and hurricanes. And we know that without very significant change, we're hurtling towards an unlivable and unsustainable future. And many are already experiencing painful impacts of climate change. And we know that we can't continue on this trajectory and expect that our children and grandchildren will have a safe planet to live on. So we need all hands on deck. We need every part of the diverse American community to be engaging around the climate crisis, and that includes the Jewish community.
As a Jewish organization, what's unique about the approach of Dayenu?
Zainu works with other Jewish organizations, other climate organizations. What's unique about Zainu is that we are Jewish, we are national, and we seek to make and engage the Jewish community to make bold, to take bold political action and to act with spiritual audacity, and to work on the systemic issues that underlie. We think about change needing to happen on an individual level, on a communal level, and on a systemic level. But to mitigate the most devastating impacts, that systemic level is really important. Because while personal practices like reducing meat consumption or greening institutions are really important, if every single person, every single Jewish institution significantly lowered their carbon footprint, we still would not avoid the most catastrophic impacts. So Dainu comes to mobilize the Jewish community to confront the climate crisis with bold political action and spiritual audacity.
Does this include lobbying, say, Congress?
It can, for sure. The Congress is, you know, one piece of the puzzle. We need comprehensive climate policy on the federal and the state level, for sure. And that is certainly one piece of it.
We will talk much more with Rabbi Jenny Rosen about Dainu, a Jewish call to climate action. Did I get it right this time?
Yes.
When we return on this 18th anniversary show of Too Jewish in just a moment. Do you know someone who personally made a major difference for the whole Jewish people? An individual who's done important work for Klal Yisrael and deserves to be highly recognized for that effort. As president of the Kohan Memorial Foundation, I'm grateful that the modest cash awards we started more than 10 years ago have grown into a substantial amount of unrestricted funds given to winners, with the help of donors like many of you. The foundation, named for my grandparents, Rabbi Samuel S. Kohan and Irma Kohan, makes these awards for important service to Klal Yisrael, the entire Jewish people. That service can be in one of four activities: unity, education, creative arts, or rescue. Past Kohan Award recipients are remarkable people who've done outstanding work. If you know someone who qualifies for a Kohan Foundation Award, please go to kohanaward.com, kohanaward.com, and fill out the simple nomination form. That website is kohanaward.com. Nominate an individual or donate yourself. Do it for the whole Jewish people. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, a kvetch or a kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's twojewishradio18@gmail. Or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, streaming us from there or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts. We've had 100,000 downloads of our podcast, and we are a top 10 Jewish radio program, I guess podcast, according to Moment magazine. We welcome back a randomly occurring feature of Too Jewish, our Zen Judaism segment. Haikus for Jews, koans of wisdom for you. Bubby, there is no need to put that dinner roll in your pocketbook. And, sorry, I'm not home to take your call. At the tone, please state your bad news. That was Zen Judaism, two haikus for Jews, two koans of wisdom on Too Jewish. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, who has been with us here on Too Jewish for every show for 18 years, maybe missed one or two along the way. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi, and Mazel Tov. 18 years is a special anniversary.
It is, a little chai here. You recently found out there's a Jewish community where, I mean, outside of Antarctica, where nobody thought Jews could possibly be. Could you tell us about that one?
Yeah, so I've started checking out the World Jewish Congress site on Facebook, and they produce once or twice a week a profile of an unusual Jewish community. And usually they're in places where I know there are Jews, and usually they're in places where I've been and met some of the Jews, whether that's Chile, Argentina, Bosnia, whatever. But recently I saw something that I had trouble believing, because I've actually been in the country and never thought that there might be Jews there. And it's the country of Mongolia.
Mongolia.
Right.
Yurts and horses and yak butter tea is what comes to mind.
Right. And it's the least densely populated country in the world. It has about one person per square mile. Its capital city, though, apparently, has a functioning Jewish community with a president who was interviewed by the World Jewish Congress. And that president has a Russian Jewish mother and a Mongolian father.
Wow.
And it turns out that the Jewish community in Mongolia really reflects kind of the history of Mongolia, which is, at one point long ago, in the time of Genghis Khan, Mongolia was its own country, and it ruled most of Asia. It had an empire that stretched from the Korean Peninsula in the northeast to the Sinai Peninsula in the southwest, and from northeastern Poland in the northwestern corner down to Vietnam in the southeastern corner.
Yeah, I think it was literally the largest empire the world has ever known.
The largest land empire, yeah, for sure. I mean, if you count the British Empire, which was kind of a maritime empire, was very spread out. I don't know how much land mass it had. It was a very big empire. But so the Mongols went from that to sort of centuries of deterioration and degradation and virtual or real occupation and or colonization by foreign powers. And so now there's a province of China where bubonic plague was recently discovered to be alive and well.
Cheerful.
Just what we needed this year, right? That's called Inner Mongolia, and it's about a quarter of what used to be Greater Mongolia. And the rest of Mongolia, so-called Outer Mongolia, was occupied and colonized by first Russia in the time of the Tsars, and then the Soviet Union. And it was basically a loyal Soviet satellite until the Soviet Union split apart. So there were a lot of Russians or half-Russians there, and of course, any place you have a lot of Russians, you're going to also have a lot of Jews. So most of the Jews, historically, let's say when Mongolia regained its freedom and independence in the 1990s, were Russians or half Russians or whatever. Now, not so many. Some of them went back to Russia. Russian is no longer a spoken language in Mongolia. But since independence, the expat community has grown by leaps and bounds. So when there's a big expat community of NGOs and assistance organizations and people dedicated to development or teaching the rule of law or whatever, there's always going to be a certain percentage of Jews, and they form what is today the Jewish community of Mongolia.
Wow. Well, that is maybe the most unusual Jewish community we have heard of here on Too Jewish in a long time, probably ever. And next time you go to Mongolia, definitely
look them up.
Look them up. Go to Shul.
For sure.
Thanks, Tom. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. And this one, in honor of our 18th anniversary, is an all-time classic. Four Jewish brothers left home for college. They became successful doctors, lawyers, and so forth. Prospered. Years later, they chatted after having dinner together. They discussed the gifts that they were able to give to their elderly mother, who lived far away in another city. The first son, Milton, said, "I had a big house built for Mama." The second, Marvin, said, "I had a $100,000 theater built into the house." The third, Mendel, said, "I had my Mercedes dealer deliver her a new limousine with a chauffeur." Huh. The fourth, Melvin, said, "Listen to this. You know how Mama loved reading the Torah? you know how religious she is, and you know she can't read anymore because she can't see so well. I met this rabbi. He told me about a parrot that can recite the entire Torah. It took 20 rabbis, 12 years to teach him. I had to pledge to contribute $100,000 a year for 20 years to the temple, but let me tell you, it was worth it. All Mama has to do is name a parsha, a Torah portion, and the parrot will chant it. The other brothers were suitably impressed. After Hanukkah, Mama sent out her thank you notes. She wrote, "Milton, the house you built is so huge. I live in only one room, but I have to have the whole house cleaned. But thanks anyway. Marvin, I am too old to travel. I stay home. I have my groceries delivered. I never use the Mercedes. And the driver you hired is a Nazi. But the thought was good. Thanks anyway. Mendel, you give me an expensive theater with surround sound. It holds 50 people. But I'm so old that all my friends are dead. I've lost my hearing. I'm nearly blind. I'll never use it. But thank you for the gesture just the same." And then she wrote, "Dearest Melvin, you were the only son to have the good sense to give a little thought to your gift. Thank you. The chicken was delicious." That was the Old Jewish Joke of the Week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And enjoy the chicken. And now a word of Torah. Have you heard about the new movement in Judaism? It's not Reform, Conservative, or Orthodox, or even Reconstructionist or Renewal. It's called Cardiac Jews. You know, I'm Jewish in my heart. While we usually think of this as a kind of abdication, meaning I'm Jewish in my heart, but I don't do anything about it in my actual life, there is one sense in which being a cardiac Jew can have real meaning. In the middle of our weekly Torah portion of Akev, a great question is asked, "What does the Lord your God ask of you? That you have awe of the Lord your God and walk in all of God's ways and love God and serve the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul," it answers. But the Torah then follows this wonderful spiritual and moral instruction with a puzzling passage, in which it tells us to do something physically impossible. We are commanded to circumcise the foreskin of our hearts. This is a new kind of Brit Milah, one that smacks of flat-out self-murder. Circumcise our hearts? How are we to do that? With a flint knife on top of an Aztec temple? And how could that possibly relate to the moral commandments we've been given in this portion, which form the core of our Deuteronomic covenantal connection to an ethical God? If we were to do that, circumcise our hearts, cut off a flap of the essential human organ, we would die, no matter how skilled the moil or the cardiac surgeon. So it must be a metaphor. In fact, the passage defines the fact that the Torah was never meant to be read purely literally and makes it very clear the Torah is and always was a teaching device to create and focus ethical and spiritual direction, not a simplistic piece of ancient lore intended to be taken literally. So what does this metaphor mean? It means that to truly love God and to walk in God's ways and to serve God and to love our fellow human beings, we must change. Circumcise the foreskin of your hearts teaches us to open our hearts to God, to holiness, to goodness. In order to be able to do what God asks in the ethical covenant of Deuteronomy, we must cut away a certain layer that exists. We must remove the hard casing we construct over our innate humanity, the armor of ego and self-interest and self-importance that builds up out of our insecurity or out of our overconfidence. We must find a way to cut away the arrogance of the eternal critic and the cool hostility of the perpetual cynic. We must remove the snide pleasure of a circulator of Lashon Hara and the self-righteous anger of the eternally injured. We must take our heads out of the equation for a bit, shut off the controlling negativity of the brain, and let our hearts express the depth of feeling and empathy within them. It's a kind of spiritual Brit Milah that Akev teaches. when we remove that casing around our hearts, when we perform this spiritual milah, we change ourselves for the better. Then we can open our hearts and feel and know that God is good and desires good, that what God wants is something we can offer, that the various ways that Akev advocates exploring how to fulfill God's desires are really no more than a means of creating good in the world. One path of kindness, ethics, personal respect. This is the heart of the matter. This is the lesson of the heart. On this Shabbat and over the coming week, may we each learn to listen to our own hearts, to get our heads out of the way long enough to touch the holiness within us. And then we may become truly cardiac Jews, if you will. Jews in our hearts, leading us to become truly Jewish in the best way, in all the other aspects of our lives. When we return on to Jewish, our guest, Rabbi Jenny Rosen, a longtime friend, will tell us what prompted her to found Dayenu, a Jewish call to climate action. Hear about it when we return on Too Jewish in just a moment.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
In Georgia, Republican Senator David Perdue's campaign took down a Facebook ad that made Democratic candidate John Ossoff's nose bigger than it is, following accusations of anti-Semitism. The Facebook ad showing Ossoff next to Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer said, "Democrats are trying to buy Georgia." The Ossoff campaign noted that both he and Schumer are Jewish. "Sitting U.S. Senator David Perdue's digital attack ad distorted my face to enlarge and extend my nose. I'm Jewish. This is the oldest, most obvious, least original anti-Semitic trope in history," said Ossoff. He's not wrong. The Perdue campaign deleted the ad following a report in The Forward, the Jewish publication, whose editor Judy Redoran was our guest exactly a year ago here on Too Jewish, by the way. A Perdue campaign spokesman said the size of Ossoff's nose in the ad was an unintentional error caused by an outside vendor who applied a filter that distorted the image. "Obviously, this was accidental, but to ensure there's absolutely no confusion, we have immediately removed the image from Facebook," said the Perdue campaign. "Anybody who implies that this was anything other than an inadvertent error is intentionally misrepresenting Senator Perdue's strong and consistent record of standing firmly against anti-Semitism and all forms of hate." The Perdue campaign also noted the senator co-sponsored a resolution last year condemning all forms of anti-Semitism. "Senator Perdue has stood with the Jewish community in both combating anti-Semitism and his unwavering commitment to the security of the Jewish state of Israel," tweeted Norm Coleman, national chairman of the Republican Jewish Coalition. "Any attempts to smear him with charges of anti-Semitism are simply false." Ossoff himself called on Perdue to apologize. "Senator, literally no one believes your excuses," Ossoff said. "You can start with an unqualified apology to Georgia's Jewish community. I will resist all tendencies to mention Pinocchio in this story." Israeli singer and rapper Netta Barzilai's song Basa Sababa just reached 100 million views on YouTube. Barzilai won the Eurovision contest 2 years ago with her song Toy, and while it's not exactly my kind of music, it sure is popular. That makes the 100,000 downloads of Too Jewish look a little less impressive, but thank you guys. Thank you. Peter Green, one of the greatest guitarists in the history of rock and roll, perhaps the best British blues player ever, died last week. Peter Alan Greenbaum was his birth name, born in Bethnal Green, London, in 1946 in a Jewish family, the youngest of Joe and Ann Greenbaum's four children. He was a prodigy, playing professionally by the time he was 15. At the age of 20, he co-founded a new rock group with Mick Fleetwood that was originally called Peter Green's Fleetwood Mac with Jimmy Spencer. That was a little ungainly, so they shortened it to Fleetwood Mac. Early hits with the group included Black Magic Woman, which Peter Green wrote, and Carlos Santana later used to rise to fame himself. Peter Green left Fleetwood Mac, which went on to become a true supergroup of the 70s and 80s, because of his out-of-control drug use and psychiatric problems that included schizophrenia. Many years later, he made a recovery and played successfully in a number of bands. He is regarded by many guitarists as incredibly influential, perhaps the best ever. He has now gone to the big rock concert in the sky. Alav HaShalom, Peter Green. Truly beautiful, seminal player. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews Round the World. We are delighted to welcome back the Two Jewish, our guest this morning. Rabbi Jenny Rosen is the founder and CEO of Dayenu, a Jewish call to climate action, and a friend of long standing. I'm getting more comfortable with that term. I don't know. An excellent rabbi who has done work in a variety of organizations and now has her very own. What does it feel like to have your own organization? Is that a fair statement?
I would say that it's an organization that I have catalyzed, brought into the world, but I'm very much working with wonderful partners. In the process, I have worked on a lot of different social and economic justice issues, and was called to create Dayenu in this moment, feeling that this is the existential crisis of our time, and that we need the Jewish community showing up in all of its people in power in this moment.
So this is an interesting moment in time, fascinating, weird, peculiar, because in the midst of everything everybody was doing, we have this coronavirus pandemic. How has that impacted getting Dayenu off the ground and the work you've started to do?
Mm-hmm. You know, I was just saying to my son the other day that I'm glad a year ago when I was deciding whether to take this leap to start Dayenu, I'm glad that I didn't know what was around the corner because I probably would have said, this is not a great time to be starting a new organization. And I'm glad I didn't know because it is as needed as ever. And in many ways, I think what we're experiencing now actually points towards the urgency. There's, you know, deep disruption that's been caused by the coronavirus. And I think that's put certain truths into sharper focus. You know, we're all experiencing how profoundly interconnected we all are. I think we have a new knowledge of what disruption feels like, of what happens when government fails to prepare or respond adequately. And what we're experiencing right now in some ways is the result of not listening to science. And I think the pandemic awakened in even the most comfortable among us the fragility of our systems, food, health, education, energy, transportation. And I feel like we're getting in our kishkas, we're getting in our guts in a new way the threat of climate collapse. So in that sense, I think it's a very auspicious time. I also think that the uprising for Black Lives has also put into sharper relief for many the systemic racism that pulses through our nation. And the climate crisis disproportionately impacts those who've been historically marginalized. And I think about the climate crisis as like a force multiplier. It exacerbates historical inequities. And it impacts everyone, like coronavirus. Doesn't impact us all equally, but it absolutely impacts everyone. And I think the climate crisis is similar. And so I think in those sorts of ways, there is a growing, I think, experience and understanding on a communal level that has the potential to really, really call people into action.
Do you see a generational difference in the understanding of climate change? And I ask that because my own kids take it as a simple truth and are, you know, they're in their late teens and early 20s, and they see very clearly that there's a climate change issue. I talk to older people, some of whom understand that it's real, some of whom do not. Do you see any of that generational difference?
Absolutely. And I think it's something that we've been thinking about as we build a multi-generational movement. What does that really mean? It's one of those things that you say, and particularly in the Jewish community, you know, you say, oh, of course, multi-generational. But then when you actually drill down on what that means, the climate crisis means it's being experienced very differently by different generations. And I don't think it's only a question of sort of do people think it's a problem. At this point, you know, studies indicate that 80% of the American Jewish community believes that the climate crisis is either a great concern to them or of some concern to them. So it's less about do they think it's a problem and more about how much it weighs on them and how they're experiencing it. So I think, for example, you know, for our children, it's a given. It's a given, and it's a very dark cloud, for lack of a better metaphor, that hangs over their very existence. I think for our generation, sort of older Gen X folks, there's loss. The world's not as we thought it was. We did not understand growing up that this was what the future held. And so I think that there's some profound, not just angst, but loss around that. I think for older generations, for some, there's also a sense of guilt and a sense that they won't be here for the worst of its impact, but feel very implicated in it. So I think the experience on a spiritual and emotional and psychological level are also very different.
What programs do you anticipate Dayenu creating? What programs have you begun already? Can you share some of your vision with us?
Absolutely. So Dayenu is looking to mobilize a real diversity of American Jews. We're really focused on, you know, the 80% of Jews I mentioned before who are concerned about climate. And most of those 80% are not currently engaged in addressing the climate crisis. There absolutely are folks who are, but the vast majority of those 80% are not. So a lot of our work is on a grassroots level. We are, Dayenu circles are being created and emerging across the country, and some of those are groups of 10 to 15 people who come together. It could be in someone's living room with friends and neighbors. It could be in a synagogue, a Green Chevra in a synagogue, or a parents group in a JCC, or we have some Diana Circles starting in other Jewish organizations or at Hillel. And these are folks who come together and want to work on the climate crisis and do so in community, and are working to on Diana national campaigns. So, for example, we have a Just Green Recovery campaign going on right now, which I can talk about in a minute maybe. And they're able to, with support from Dayenu and resources and training and coaching, to engage in that work. And they also may be working on local work. They may be working on a local incinerator, or they may be working on greening their institution or other local work. So that's really on a grassroots level. There are also individuals who just are coming on and maybe signing on to a letter to Congress or attending a webinar that we're running or something like that as an individual. And then looking towards the future, within a number of months, looking to create a Dayenu hub in D.C., which is on the institutional level for Jewish organizations, national organizations, to begin to understand better climate policy and what role their institution in the Jewish community can be playing, on a national level. So that's a little bit on the institutional level and a little bit on the grassroots. And then the last is, you know, a lot of relationships. Building with other groups, with multi-faith climate groups, with other Jewish environmental groups, and with secular climate organizations that we're working very much in alignment. You know, the Jewish community is a small piece of a much bigger movement. I would say we're small but mighty.
Yeah, small but perhaps influential as well. Is there any connection to groups in Israel working on the same thing? Do you see that happening?
There are absolutely groups working in Israel on climate. Dayenu is really focused on the United States and the role that the Jewish American Jewish community can play in America climate policy and work. And that also, I should say, includes, you know, not only I mentioned before climate policy, it's also about electoral work, B3 world work, you know, to see through contours, if you look out in electoral work, engaging the American Jewish community in these upcoming elections, and educating voters and candidates about climate and the role that and its importance, and also around campaigns around fossil fuel finance, sort of how is the fossil fuel industry being financed, and what role are institutions and even are we playing inadvertently in supporting the fossil fuel industry?
What do you say to people who don't think climate change is such a crucial issue now?
It's an interesting question. And honestly,
I'll clarify why I ask it, because I think for those of us who understand the incredible danger poised to affect us, but even more our children and grandchildren, it's not a hard sell. It's an obvious question. But there are plenty of people who don't think that, and they may be people in our own congregation or our own families. So I think it'd be helpful to have an approach that might, I think we sometimes need to know what to say.
Mm-hmm. So I think there's different kinds of, you know, people talk about climate denial. I think for the most part, in most of the Jewish community, it is not climate denial in the sense of, you know, climate change is a hoax. That is not mostly what I hear from folks in the Jewish community. And that's the diversity of the Jewish community. What I do hear is there are other more important issues. Or, you know, it's not the role of, you know, why should the Jewish community be engaged in this?
We should be supporting Israel, or we should be supporting Jewish education or something like that.
Right. Or there's a lot of what I would call emotional denial. And this isn't just in the Jewish community. This is in all Americans, which is it is just too overwhelming to imagine and to really entertain that if this is, you know, What the science tells us is that life is going to be untenable for our children and grandchildren in all sorts of ways. And that's really hard, like on a spiritual level, on an emotional level, on a psychological level, to contemplate. And so I think all of us, to some degree, have to look away, have to distract ourselves, have to assume that something's going to happen that will make it not that terrible. And so I think that there's actually a role for religious communities, for Jewish communities, communities of value, communities of meaning, which we, you know, which we are, to support Jews to confront this truth, and to confront it in a way that gives space for the anxiety and the grief and the worry. And part of Zainu's work is actually around what we're calling spiritual adaptation. And we're right now, in addition to the systemic political work, we are developing resources and about to pilot in the coming year some workshops and work and resources for Jewish communities to really support Jews in a Jewish practice, to not look away, to actually open up our sort of hearts and souls to this, and therein be able to live with greater integrity. I don't mean integrity in like a judgment sense, but integrity like integrated. Because I think even, not everyone's up in the middle of the night worrying about the climate crisis, but I think most of us have a little bit, it's the elephant in the room. There's like a gnawing anxiety in the background or static that's running. And so how can we as a Jewish community really have this most pressing kind of issue of the 21st century be something we can support people to confront?
How can people get involved? And how can they find out more about Zainu? What's the best way to get started?
So the best way to get started is to go to Zainu.org, www, and we spell Zainu. Zainu is spelled lots of different ways, as all Hebrew words are in English.
Of course.
We spell it Dayenu, Dayenu.org.
The simplest way you can spell it in English, I think.
Right, and there are all sorts of ways there to get involved. You can have resources to start a Zainu circle, ways to get involved in current campaigns, as well as you know, ways to support financially Zainu and other organizations is another important way to get involved. I think that the American Jewish community has such a significant role to play in ensuring that we can continue, you know, door to door, generation to generation, and need to bring our full people and power of the Jewish community to work together with other communities to forge from this dark place that we're in a new kind of world, one that's more just and more sustainable. I don't know if we have time, Sam. I would love to just say a word about Tisha B'Av, which we just celebrated.
Please.
When I was thinking about this question of forging a new world, you know, Tisha B'Av, which we just celebrated on Thursday, commemorates lots of terrible things that happened to the Jewish people. And most specifically, it's the commemoration of the destruction of the temple, the ancient temple in Jerusalem. And, you know, we think a lot about the devastation of that. It also, the story of the destruction of the ancient temple is also the story of radical transformation. The destruction of the temple meant the end of the sacrificial system, right? The way that Judaism was practiced with sacrifices on the altar, and the birth of Rabbinic Judaism. Judaism as we know it today, practiced with deeds and practiced with prayer. And it's actually an incredibly powerful example of a complete paradigmatic and societal transformation, this shift that happened. And so when we think about the story of what came after the destruction of the temple, there was this era of needing to rebuild and rebuild not the same structures, but to rebuild one that really transformed Jewish civilization into a new era. And we can think about times throughout history, other times throughout history, when there had to be profound reinvention, right? The Jewish community has faced destruction many times over. And each time we've had to re-envision and rebuild a different kind of future. And I've been thinking about that this year as we celebrated Tisha B'Av, because we're in one of those moments now where we need to be re-envisioning and rebuilding a really different kind of future. And I think that the Jewish community has a lot to bring to that. And as a spiritually rooted, multi-generational, bold community that centers justice.
it's a beautiful comparison and wonderful work that you're doing. I have to share a story. You taught me something extremely important a long time ago. I was going back to school, having been a cantor, and you had gone on to rabbinical school, and we were studying together. And you asked if I wanted something to drink, and I said, yeah, do you have a beer? And you said, Sam, coffee is for studying, beer is for partying. And so you gave me a life lesson, Jenny. It's very important.
Oh, I do not remember that. I do not remember that at all.
Well, it was a long time ago. I want to thank Rabbi Jenny Rosen for a great visit here on To Jewish. Dayenu, dayenu.org is the place to go to find out more about her great work. Jenny, thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Sam. Good to be with you all.
When we come back, we'll hear about next week's guest and get a final musical play out on this 18th anniversary edition of To Jewish.
There's magic in the air at this special place for fun, a place where fortune smiles and Tucson comes alive. This is Casino del Sol, the best games in town, amazing dining and top-flight entertainment. This is a heart that beats with excitement, with passion and beauty. It's all waiting for you at Casino del Sol. This is the soul of Tucson. Presenting sponsor of University of Arizona Basketball, Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaqui Tribe.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on this 18th anniversary edition of To Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Our playout comes from cantor Shmuel Barzilai, appropriate to this celebratory morning. It's another great Shehecheyanu, this one Meyer Machtenberg's. Join us next Sunday when our guest on To Jewish will be Professor Ami Moyal, president of FECA Tel Aviv Academic College of Engineering, telling us about some Israeli innovations on coronavirus detection and response. My friends, may you have a healthy week. God willing, a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Sponsored by Two Jewish Radio Programs, Tucson, Arizona.